from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today we'll have an all Travis show. Mr. T, take it away.
Well, thanks. First, I'll talk with young adult author John David Anderson, then find out what's going on this season with the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble, and finally chat with young playwright Kenzie Suter about her new show at the Fringe. Then there'll be that calendar of events we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. In local young adult author John David Anderson's book Sidekicked, the heroes of the story are the sidekicks, who also happen to be eighth graders trying to learn how to use their superpowers and also how to do algebra problems. Travis DiNicola spoke with Anderson about his new book.
Dave, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I loved the book. Just a ton of fun. I had such a good time reading this. I'm guessing you had a good time writing this.
You know, that's actually the whole reason that I write for myself. And if I'm not having fun writing it, then after about 5 or 10 pages, I ditch it. So I've probably got 30 or 40 novels that it turns out I just wasn't enjoying myself enough to even bother finishing them. But this one went straight through, yeah.
So for our listeners who have not had a chance to read Sidekicked yet, would you give me a brief summary of what the plot is, and then we'll talk about that? And...
Sure. Sidekicked is, it's basically a coming-of-age story that is kind of ensconced, set in a superhero environment, right? Or it's a superhero story set in a coming-of-age situation or something, but it's definitely
a world where superheroes are normal, somewhat.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And you know that world. You're familiar with that world from being part of that culture, right? And so that what that does is it allows me to kind of play with those conventions and trace the evolution of this character, the main character, whose name is Drew, and who is a superhero sidekick, but he's got some problems. He has your normal middle school problems. He deals with girls and friends and cheating on math tests and all that. But then, of course, he also has the fact that he's a superhero sidekick and has to battle evil, and he has, like, this terribly lame power.
It's so funny because, you know, you're reading this, and, like, as an adult, I'm thinking, what a cool power. But you can totally get a sense of, like, this poor kid. He's, like, you know, seeing all of his other friends who can, you know, like, turn into flame or super strong, and he just senses things.
He senses things. He's a very sensitive guy, right?
Right.
And he can see and smell and hear evil coming from a mile away, but once it gets there, he's powerless to stop it, right? And, you know, in the traditional sense of our sort of hierarchy of superpowers, you know, super senses is pretty far down there.
He's kind of the Aquaman of the group.
He really is. Slightly pathetic, and he knows it. But, you know, part of the novel is him coming to grips with the fact that there are ways that he can contribute and use his powers for good, right?
Right.
And so that's kind of the fun of it. And the other thing I liked about it was him being super sensitive and having these abilities and it being a first-person narrative, then I can sort of write and see things and hear things and smell things from his point of view that I wouldn't be able to normally, you know, if it was just a regular guy.
I mean, the poor guy, you know, he can't help but, like, every time he's talking to someone, like, know what they just had for breakfast or, you know, or overhear conversations that maybe he wasn't supposed to overhear.
Right, exactly.
You know, and you're just thinking, oh, man, and he's trying to, like, learn how to just filter it out. And control it.
Yeah. And there's no question why school lunches would be so horrifying for him, right?
Right.
Be able to smell them a mile away. But yeah, I think one of the issues that superhero fiction in and of itself deals with is this idea of not only gaining control of your power, but seeing the roads and the avenues that that power opens up to you. Like you can take the path of goodness or you can take the path of darkness, but most people, they fluctuate, and Drew fluctuates, right? He can see the different ways that this could be useful to him personally, selfishly, but at the same time, he has this code that he has to try and live up to, and yet the heroes that he's trying to role model himself after, they're constantly
failing.
They're
not really living
up to their code. No, they're not, right? Yeah. They're not using their powers to the forces of good by any stretch, mm-hmm. so why should he?
Right.
You know,
there's a lot of interesting discussion in the book about, you know, what is good and what is bad and what does that mean and how does that all play out? It's just a very enjoyable read because, I mean, as you said, you're playing with a lot of the conventions that are sort of expected and typical of a comic book type of story. And I love comic books, so, you know, and I'm guessing you must as well.
Oh, yeah.
But you're getting into, you know, in some ways, you know, in the way that, you know, we look at historically, you know, Spider-Man and Peter Parker was, you know, really the first time that the hero had doubts and a personality and all the things that he had to deal with. Now we're going, like, even further back to the sidekick and this poor kid that's just trying to figure out what's going on.
Right. And I think culturally, in terms of our sort of mass culture and our, I don't want to say newfound, but certainly there's a big influx of superhero fiction mm-hmm. and movies, obviously, coming out. And I think what you're seeing more and more are these heroes exhibiting their flaws. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Superman's getting dark, and obviously Batman has always been tortured, but he seems to be even more tortured now than he ever was before.
Right.
And so the idea of Drew sort of following this model where, you know, superheroes are human too, and they deal with many of the same issues, right, that we do mm-hmm. in terms of our confidence and questioning morality. And so I think one of the things I wanted to do with this novel was to sort of give a framework where it would be enjoyable. I've got Kerpow moments, right? There's
sure.
explosions, there's all that stuff. But as one reviewer said, you know, this book has teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And so use that to kind of delve into a lot of the issues that I think even middle grade readers are facing as they try to enter the adult world.
Well, so much of the book is about the friendships that that he has, that Drew has, and both with Jenna as well as with the other kids that are part of this sort of sidekick and training school. Some he gets along with really well, some he doesn't get along with, right?
Right.
I mean, and that's, you know, sort of part of, I mean, what middle school is unfortunately about.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the dodgeball game or that becomes, you know, this dramatic event, whatever it is, you know, all these things in our minds when we're at that age, they carry such massive weight and significance. And so yeah. One of the things that's funny about Drew is he applies that same significance to a random encounter with Jenna that he mm-hmm. would to fighting, you know, the uber bad guy. They both kind of weigh on his soul.
Oh, a kiss from Jenna may be even more so than the uber bad guy.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
yeah.
Like,
I would much rather face the dealer and all of his minions than to have to go on a date with Jenna, right? Because then I have to question, what have we been doing the past
right.
2 years, and what does it mean, and do you like me, and all these terrible things.
Yeah, dating's hard enough without being super sensitive.
Yeah, right, right? Exactly.
So, I mean, you can tell, like I said, you have fun with this. You know, there's some stuff that as an adult reading this, I just found hysterical. What's been the response from middle school kids that have been reading? I mean, it's because it is sort of a young adult book, right?
So. It is. I mean, I think it kind of straddles that line between middle grade and young adult,
yeah.
Which is fine. So far, the response has been great. You know, this book is awesome. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy is hearing them talk about who their favorite characters are and who their favorite heroes are, mm-hmm. And really sort of questioning what it means to be a hero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they look at the Titan, who is Drew's superhero, who's supposed to be there for him.
He's supposed to be his mentor.
Right.
He's just not there. He's not available.
He's
off on a bar stool feeling sorry for himself.
And I think they're not used to seeing that kind of persona. And
yeah.
So I've had readers come up to me, young readers come up to me and question, you know, why did you make him this way? If
yeah.
he's, and I said, you know, listen, who are your heroes, right? Do they have flaws? Who are the people we idolize in our culture? And, you know, think about all the pressure that comes on them and all the responsibilities they have to deal with to be role models for us.
Sure.
Right. And sometimes they fall. And then it becomes somebody else's responsibility to help pick them back up. And, you know, that's kind of Drew's quest, ultimately, as the book goes on, is to see how he's going to bring the Titan back into the fold.
Okay, so I got to ask a question. Do his parents really not know? I mean, because, I mean, his parents, you know, when poor Drew was born, I mean, he was a very unhappy child because as a baby, he was sensitive to everything. And of course, the parents knew that eventually once he started getting tested, once he got a little bit older. So they're aware of his interesting abilities, but maybe, but are they really not aware that he's becoming a superhero?
Yeah, I mean, that's... it's one of the funny things, right? If you remember the movie from Incredibles, the thing I love about that movie is they just put on that little tiny black mask.
Right.
And all of a sudden you don't know who they are anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's like one of the conventions of superhero-dom that, you know, Clark Kent looks nothing like Superman, really, right? Because he doesn't wear glasses anymore.
And even Drew's own mom would not recognize
him. So, you know, it's the camera was at a distance. And so I'm playing with that to a certain extent. I'm kind of making fun of it. And I created Drew's parents to be a little dopey, you know, but at the same time, they live in this city where, you know, all this stuff is happening around them, and it becomes just sort of every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so surely my son is not going to get involved in this stuff.
Right.
Right. And it also sort of allows me to play with Drew's secret keeping ability.
Mm-hmm.
And in one scene that got deleted, I actually had his father sort of confronting him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I would have thought it was the mom who would confront him, maybe, eventually.
Yeah. Well, they both knew, but it was dad who was sent in. But they didn't know what they knew,
right?
So they go in, and they're sort of talking to him. And it turns out they don't think he's a superhero sidekick. They're worried about something else entirely, right? and so he's like, you know, well, what am I going to do with this, right? They're going to have this whole other talk about something, you know. And so just when you think, they've figured it out. The fun part is playing with the conventions, undermining some, exalting others, and sort of giving that wink-wink to fans of comic books and superheroes.
Absolutely. So something that, of course, we've seen plenty of with any superhero story is the sequel. So what are you working on next?
The next book, and it's going to come out next summer, early next summer, and it's called Minion.
Okay.
And from the title, if you sort of set it beside Sidekicked, you can kind of guess where this is going. And it's called a companion.
Not exactly a sequel, though, right?
It's not exactly. Okay. No, it's called a companion novel. It's more of a mirror image.
Yeah.
And so what it does is
set in the same world.
Set in the same world.
Okay.
Completely different characters.
Okay.
Completely different city. Completely different plot. But exploring the coming of age of yet another character who has superpowers, but he's definitely on the other path, right?
Okay.
He's the minion to this mad scientist, right? Adoptive father, homeschooled boy, and, you know, got ties to the mafia, robs banks, all this kind of stuff. And is still dealing with the exact same issues,
right?
There's still a girl. There's still homework to do. And there's even more now this sense of the ability to use one's powers to further one's own personal end as opposed to for the greater good, because he's in a situation where he and his father have to go to these extremes in order to get by. And so family loyalty then becomes incredibly important in that book.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's fun because there are actually scenes, in Minion that you can set right beside scenes in Sidekicked and hold them next to each other and say, all right, let's look at how these two characters reacted in this situation.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden you've got a debate opened up that kids can talk about.
There's got to be some temptation to carry on with some of these characters, though, I would think.
There is. I especially like the whole idea of hero, right? And this notion that Mr. Masters has developed these group of kids, and they're going to evolve, and they're going to grow. And so my hope is at some point, you know, maybe these two universes collide.
Sure.
And the minions and the sidekicks come together, and they duke it out, or who knows, maybe a whole new character comes into play. But, yeah, I've had a lot of readers come and ask me, you know, what happens to Drew next? Does the Titan ever, you know, change his mind and come back? And where did Jenna go? I shouldn't say anymore, just
no,
in case
no,
you haven't
no,
read
say
it. You know,
more.
But,
don't say anything more. But, well, I am looking forward to the next installments that are aligned with Sidekick, because, again, really enjoyed it very much, Dave. Thanks so much for coming in to Art of the Matter and chatting about it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Travis DiNicola with young adult author John David Anderson. His book Sidekicked is available at bookstores everywhere. More information is available at johndavidanderson.org. johndavidanderson.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. As part of Travesty Nicola's ongoing quest to cover as many of the local productions of Nutcracker as possible this season, he recently sat down with Suzanne DeLay, the artistic director of Central Indiana Dance Ensemble, to learn about their Nutcracker and what else the resident company of the Center for the Performing Arts is up to.
Suzanne, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So, tell me about the Central Indy Dance Ensemble. You are the founder of this.
I am the founding director of Central Indiana Dance Ensemble. We were founded in 1999.
Mm-hmm. And so, you are a combination of both classes and performances based out of Carmel, is that right?
That's correct.
So, tell me about your students, age, number, all that sort of thing.
Okay. We're a pre-professional youth ballet company.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have about 57 students, are members in the company. They range from ages of 8 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have a little bit more, sometimes we have a few less. Just
sure.
Depends on the year.
So what does that mean, pre-professional, for those students?
For those students, what that means is that they are studying in the capacity of potentially becoming a professional dancer.
Mm-hmm.
We run the company like a professional company as much as we can. You know, they are children still.
Sure.
But they are taking as many classes as they are supposed to based on our curriculum, and we gear their training towards those dancers wanting careers in the dance field.
Very good. And your studios, your main studios, are located up on the north side of Carmel?
Yes, they are.
About
146 in Meridian.
Very good. So I know that you guys are doing something completely different in the dance world and having a Nutcracker performance.
Yes, we are.
No one else is doing that at all this holiday season.
Not at all. No, you know, yes, we are. We're having a Nutcracker this year. This is our 14th mm-hmm. Nutcracker. We've been doing one since we were incorporated, and pretty exciting that we're 14 years old doing it.
And you're doing this at the Pike Performing Arts Center?
No, actually, we're doing it at the Zionsville Performing
Arts
Center.
Sorry about that. So, because I know that you also perform at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel through the Targington, right?
Yes, we do. We're actually one of their resident companies.
Yeah.
And we have three main stage performances. One is the Nutcracker, and then mm-hmm. we do two, one in March and one in usually May. And those are performed at the Tarkington.
That's great that you've got that relationship with the Tarkington.
Yes, it's really exciting. We've been able to have some great opportunities. We've got some dancers that are going to be at the with the Modern Dance Company this Thursday,
nice.
Being able to take their company class.
Mm-hmm. So you get to use both stage for performance and then have other connections and partnerships. That's great.
Yes.
But Nutcracker is not at the center. As you said, Nutcracker is at the Zionsville Performing Arts Center up there with the high school. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So let me ask you this. What makes your Nutcracker special?
Well, this year we're really excited. We've got two collaborations. One, which I'll go into first, is our community awareness program, and we're really encouraging our dancers to be community aware
mm-hmm.
and giving back to our community. And so we've teamed up with Gleaners Food Bank.
Yeah, I saw something about that on your website. That's great.
Right. So every ticket that's sold, the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble will be donating $1 to the Gleaners Food Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will be collecting food at each of our performances, plus at the studio, and also our company dancers are going down to work out at the mm-hmm. Gleaners Food Bank one evening.
That's really cool. That's a great way to, especially during the holidays, and a nice way to connect Nutcracker to Gleaners. What a great idea.
Right. And our second collaboration mm-hmm. is with the Indianapolis Children's Choir.
Okay.
Three of their regional county choirs, one from Fishers, one from Carmel, and the one from Zionsville,
mm-hmm.
will be performing on stage with us during our snow scene.
Oh, how nice.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Now, is this a new partnership?
It is. It
wow,
is.
Wow, that's
our first
very
year.
Cool.
So I've been wanting that to happen. You know, it's hard, obviously, with symphonies being what they are, and arts being what they are, and budgets being what they are in the arts, it's wonderful to have some sort of some live music.
Live music and the live singing. Wow. Yeah,
yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's going to be so cool. Now, when that happens, I believe, well, how many performances of Nutcracker do you have?
We actually do five.
Five, okay.
Four of them are open to the public, and one is our free performances, free performance for Indianapolis children to come and see it. We've collaborated with multiple different organizations to bring the kids in and have a taste of Nutcracker, which probably they otherwise would not be able to see.
So I'm just curious with the live musicians and the singers, how often will your dancers get a chance to rehearse with them prior to those performances?
Actually, there isn't any live musicians. It's just singers.
The
live singers. And we won't actually perform with them until our tech rehearsal the Tuesday prior to our opening night, which is Friday.
Okay. So a little bit of time beforehand, but not much.
Right.
Yeah. But that's going to be very exciting for the dancers, I'm sure.
Yes. We're beyond excited.
So tell me a little bit more about your production of Nutcracker. So in addition to having the singers from the children's choir and, of course, the connection to Benefit Gleaners, you said there was a couple other things that make it special.
Well, we do use the Tchaikovsky music, and we haven't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying that as
a joke.
And
this is a full-length production.
It is a full-length. I'm just saying that as a joke because somebody said that to me the other day. The Indianapolis City Ballet was at the studio, and they were kind of joking with me. And, well, we do have new choreography. We also are bringing back, as our Cavalier and Snow King this year, one of my former students who is out with Ballet West.
Oh, nice.
So he will be coming and...
And who's that?
His name's Jacob Pringle.
Mm-hmm. And so he'll be a guest dancer?
He will be. We have Stephen Wright recreating his part as the Drosselmeyer. Every year, because based on our company and our dancers, our choreography changes.
Sure.
So this year we're able to bring back the Russian Min back to our lineup. Last year we didn't. This year we have our Russian Min. So I'm excited about that. It always brings down the house. I've got two young, very talented young boys. I shouldn't say they're young. One's 16, one's 17. Mm-hmm. So that's sure to be an exciting piece in the Nutcracker.
Your Russian Men?
My Russian Men. They're not Russian. Oh, but they are Russian.
Neat. Well, that's exciting. And tell me, please, the dates and the times for your production of the Nutcracker.
All right. Our Nutcracker runs Friday, December 13th through Sunday, December 15th. I'm sorry. The Friday night performance is at 7:30. We do two performances on Saturday, one at 2 and one at 7:30. And Sunday, we do a 2 o'clock performance. Before our 2 o'clock performances, we also host a sugar plum tea that the children are invited to attend. We have hands-on crafts, pictures taken with the characters, and treats.
And how can people get tickets?
They can go on our website, which is www.cidedance.org, or call 317-844-7453.
Now, what about for students? Do you generally have fall enrollment, or is a rolling schedule for that for new students?
It depends on the student. We do a fall enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
We also have some ongoing enrollment. It depends on if you've had dance before or not.
Mm-hmm.
We also, in January, with our younger dancers, our little ones, we do have enrollment in January also.
Now, I know you do other productions besides Nutcracker. What else do you have coming up?
In March, in fact, March 2nd at the Tarkington, we'll be doing our program, which we call Mixed Rep, which is bringing in some new choreographers into this area for people to see. Seeing all our companies. We have four different companies. On that program, we perform, three of our companies perform in a variety of choreographed pieces for them.
Can you give me a little bit more description, such as?
Well, this year we brought in a very talented young choreographer from Columbus, Ohio, named Ashley Sass, who has choreographed on us a couple of times, and she created a new piece. Our other piece, former professor Tong Wang, who was professor at Butler University, who's now out at Irvine, came in and choreographed a piece, and it's called Enchanted Warrior. It's really a different piece for us, and that will be performed we will be bringing an all-company performance using Vivaldi's Spring and breaking it into our companies to be performing each section of that.
Excellent, excellent. And that will be at the Tarkington, correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good. Well, it sounds like you've got a lot going on, and certainly looking forward to seeing the Central Indiana Dance Ensemble's production of The Nutcracker, as well as the other work that you do. Sounds like it'll be just a great season for you.
I think so. We're excited. I did want to mention about the Nutcracker tickets. There is a discount code to save a little bit of money on the tickets.
Okay.
And so I wanted to pass that on. It's the discount code to save on the tickets is CIDE. N-U-T.
So C-I-D-E for Central Indiana Dance Ensemble and N-U-T.
Correct.
Okay, very good. Well, Suzanne, so glad to have you come into Art of the Matter today. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it too.
Travis DiNicola with Suzanne DeLay, the Artistic Director of Central Indiana Dance Ensemble. Their production of The Nutcracker takes place from December 13th through the 15th at the Zionsville Performing Arts Center. You can get more information at CIDEdance.org, CIDEdance.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon. One more week. You do that gobble so well.
I do not even remember how that started. It's a little worrisome, isn't it? Yes, I am sort of a grown-up. But you know what? There's something about the holidays that brings out the child in all of us. And
That's so true.
Some events on our calendar that will bring your childhood back to you, just the happy memories.
Oh, how sweet. Or at least ones that you'll be thankful for.
Oh, there we go.
On that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
That's right. Well, some great things continue to go on at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend and next as well. This weekend's the International Festival. It's going on Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the West Pavilion, and it really features countries, well, from all over the world. There you go. But they have booths and demonstrations. There's food, there's dance, there's theater. There's more food.
Oh my gosh, food. It's such a great place to eat.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to stop and eat regularly to keep up your energy to get through all of the exhibitions.
And there's also cool stuff to buy as gifts, perhaps,
Oh,
if you're looking for that and stuff. But then next weekend, there's flea markets at the State Fairgrounds, as well as some other things. But this is really exciting, Sharon, because in 2 weeks, the Hoosier Beef Congress is taking place from December 6th through 8th at the Exhibition Hall. And you can get more information about the Hoosier Beef Congress is at their website. It's also the same weekend as the Reptile Show.
I don't think I have a reptile in my repertoire. Can you do one? Okay.
I don't know
why the Beef Congress suddenly struck me as funny. I guess it was the U-turn from the International Festival and Flea Markets. By the way, the other thing...
and ice skating, too, is going on.
I was going to say ice skating. Yeah, you can check out the ice skating after you haven't been able to ice skate at the Coliseum. It's been more than a year now.
So that's what I'm opening with. What do you got?
Nothing as good as the Beef Congress, I'm just saying. No, actually, I have things that are very cool.
My.
In addition to being all decked out for the holidays, Vivi, Indiana, is doing something really cool. I recommend a road trip on December 7th because they do a Christmas parade. But here's the way they started off. They do a simultaneous bell ring throughout the city, including the bells of the Most Sorrowful Mother of God Church, Switzerland County Baptist Church, Switzerland County Historical Museum, which is a former Presbyterian church, and Reuters Chapel Methodist Church. The bell ringing all happens at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, And the county courthouse will sound its usual top of the hour, four rings. But here's the thing that's kind of fun. When you get in your car to go down there and check things out, bring your own hand, sleigh, or jingle bells to help ring in the parade.
Oh, that's cool. That's
so,
very neat.
Yeah, the whole community ringing bells at the same time to celebrate the season. Once again, that's Saturday, December 7th at Vivi in Southern Indiana. A little bit of a road trip.
Very good. Hey, Phoenix Theater has Rancho Mirage, which is closing this weekend, running through Sunday. And then next weekend, after Thanksgiving, they are opening up a very Phoenix Xmas 8 with the title Angels We Have Heard While High. That is correct. That is the title of it. It is their very Phoenix spoof of great Xmas shows, and it takes place from the 29th of November through December 22nd. Always worth seeing, always lots of fun, and can't wait to see what they do this year.
So this is radio, so we have to describe to you that the as part of the visual for that show, there's a very innocent-looking cherub.
A Christmas cherub?
Yes, holding a little joint.
Ah.
Just saying. We are not condoning it. I'm just describing it to you.
Hoping you understand.
So if you want a really straight-ahead holiday experience,
wow,
you probably want to go... Did I say that?
Yeah.
I didn't mean it. But you probably want to go to one of the many nutcrackers
there
that Travis
there are
is
lots,
tracking
there are a
down.
Lot of them.
Or maybe Yuletide Celebration that the ISO is putting on.
Something a little bit more traditional.
Maybe you want to go to the IRT's Christmas Carol, which you'll hear more about soon on the Art of the Matter. Or maybe see one of the productions of Messiah in town.
There you go.
There are at least three this year.
There are quite many.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned, in fact, I think every week for the next like 4 or 5 weeks, I'm doing a different preview of a different ballet school
so
in town's version of Nutcracker.
And releveing over there.
And there are lots of great schools in town, lots of great productions in Nutcracker. But one I do want to mention that's just a little bit different from the rest is Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's production of Nutcracker. That's coming up December 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Pike Performing Arts Center. And if you know Gregory Hancock, you know that they always do things a little bit twisted. And that's what their production is. So it's just a little bit different, not exactly traditional for their Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of twisty things. Hey, this is a little twisty. On Saturday, November 30th, the Pride of Indie Bands will be holding its 7th annual fundraiser. It's called Time Warp Vegas, baby.
Wow.
The event will feature 3 hours of big band-style jazz music from the Pride of Indie Jazz Ensemble, which I got to hear recently. Fabulous group. Special guest vocalist Brenda Williams will be joining them, as will local singer-songwriter Sean Baker. There'll be a silent auction and dancing in a full bar. Where, you say?
At the
Athenaeum. It's an all-ages event, however. You can get more information at prideofindie.org. Doors open at 7 o'clock. Once again, that's next Saturday, November 30th. Great cause, fun music, and again, an all-ages event.
Well, if you wanted to surprise your family this holiday season with playing them Christmas carols on your ukulele, then perhaps you should consider going to one of the group classes. They have three. It's a 3-week group class in ukulele for both adults and teens. It's taking place at the Center for the Performing Arts. That's right. Ukulele classes at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. Two different group classes, Ukulele 101 and Ukulele 103, for those who have a little bit more experience. And these will be led by ukulele master Jeff Davis and taking place December 2nd, 9th, and 16th. Each one meets for an hour in the Palladium Concert Hall. They are limited to 25 people. You get more information at thecenterpresents.org or call their box office to register for your ukulele class.
Because more than 25 beginning ukulele players would just be scary.
That's right. You can only have, that's the maximum you can have in any state at any time.
They must have had great success when Jake Shimabukuro was in town and they did the classes last spring.
Yes,
good for
them. Yes, so they're doing them again.
I don't know of any place else you can study ukulele, so take advantage. Hey, First Friday is next week, and there is so much going on. Mass Ave, it's the start of their holiday extravaganza. No eggnog has been involved yet, but a great chance, not only the galleries, but the stores on Mass Ave will stay open late, and there's a lot of, as you know, great independent retail along Mass Ave, so buy local for your holiday needs. Also, Circle City Industrial Complex artist galleries and studios will be open on December 6th. from 6 to 9 p.m. And that will include Seesaw Studio, which is hosting work by a diver and underwater photographer. Also, a glass-blowing show sponsored by Indie Flame Art. And as they say, much, much more. So Circle City Industrial Complex Artist Galleries, basically go to the east end of Mass Ave, cross over 10th Street, and you're there.
Yeah, look for the big blue building.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a huge building. Huge mm-hmm. building. Hey, this is kind of fun. If you're looking for something to do with the kids after Thanksgiving on that weekend, well, they are showing, they being the IMAX Theater at the Indiana State Museum, is showing the 3D version of the Polar Express and is having a pajama party as part of it.
Aww.
What that means is that starting the night after Thanksgiving, this polar pajama party for the public, that's easy for me to say, and it's going to be taking place each Friday and Saturday night until Christmas. And so families are invited to bring their kids in pajamas for the 7:30 showing of Polar Express. And families that bring kids 12 and younger wearing pajamas will get buy one adult, get one free child admission, and which is pretty, pretty fun. So very cool thing. So you can go watch Polar Express and wear your slippers if you wish and in your pajamas.
Speaking of Polar Express, you won't want to wear your pajamas to this, but the Indiana Transportation Museum is offering a Polar Express railroad journey.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is so fun to do, especially I've been with a friend who had a 7 and a 5-year-old to take that trip. And, you know, little kids don't know as much about trains as they did maybe when you were a little kid. So get your kids familiar with this still relevant mode of transportation.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's moving and fun. Gets them away from a screen and out of the digital world and into the real life world.
Got one more thing for Sunday, and that's the Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis is going to be traveling to the historic Athenaeum Theater down on Mass Ave for the second concert of their 2013-14 season, and it is going to be a portrait of personalities with a lot of great concerts, and this is taking a lot of great pieces of music, taking place at 3 p.m. on Sunday the 24th at the Athenaeum.
And this is not family-friendly, but it's still a lot of fun at the Vogue next Friday. That's the 29th. If you have friends and family in town for Thanksgiving, you might want to put this on your calendar as something they can go out to burn off some calories. The Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, part of the Bud Light Concert Series, playing
always
on that
fun.
Night, 9 o'clock, doors open at 8, at the Vogue Theater in Broad Ripple with Dom Flemons and the Whipstitch Sallies.
Oh, very good.
Ooh, lot of fun. So, something to do, and they don't mind if you dance in the aisles.
Not at all. Sharon, we'll be back next week for more of that turkey talk on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Kenzie Suter is a determined young lady who wants to put on a play. Her original show, Dr. Phil Presents, Happily Ever After, makes its premiere this weekend at the Indie Fringe Theater. Travis DiNicola sat down with Kenzie to learn more.
Kenzie, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. I am really curious about this show. I found out about it because Pauline Moffat of the Indie Fringe was telling me that you sort of came to her and told her that that she had to put on your show, and she said okay. So tell me about your show. It's the title is Dr. Phil Presents Happily Ever After. Is that right?
Yes.
And you wrote this.
I did.
Okay, so tell me all about it.
Oh, okay. So the show is I have always wondered what would happen, like, after the Happily Ever After, because Disney never really touches and what goes on after, unless it's a sequel and it's usually not the same plot. So we decided to take Disney characters and put them after they're happily ever after and like have them have exaggerated real world problems.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Aladdin grew up poor in the streets of Agrabah, which is part of the original story.
Right.
And he married the princess and he became Sultan.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's developed a serious hoarding problem because he doesn't want anything go. You know, you never have anything, so you come up and you suddenly have all these things and you just want to keep them. So they go to Dr. Phil for help. And Ariel has
That's a hoot. Okay, so it's
yeah.
So it's the Disney characters, mm-hmm. the prince and princesses going to Dr. Phil basically after the story we know ends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Ariel?
Ariel, she's developed severe problems with plastic surgery that's led her to live a more Beverly Hills housewife kind of lifestyle, you know, mm-hmm. partying, younger men. And so these are the different kinds of things that you see throughout the show. We have, the princesses are Cinderella,
mm-hmm.
which is played by me.
Okay.
We have Beauty and the Beast, played by Star Duvall. We have Ariel.
Does she develop an allergy or anything?
Oh, no. That one's it'll be pretty easy to figure out what her problem is.
Okay.
So we have Ariel, played by Leah Porter. Then we have Snow White, played by Erin Finney. And we have Jasmine, who's mm-hmm. played by my sister, Morgan Suter.
Very cool. Yeah. Okay. So now, is this a play? Have you guys done this before, or is this the first time?
No, I have never done anything on the scale before. I did a ton of theater
mm-hmm.
And music growing up, you know, through high school. And then when I got into college, it was like, okay, time to, you know, put on your big girl pants and figure out what you're going to do. And I wasn't happy with any of those choices. And so I decided that I was going to do what I wanted. And I actually read Mindy Kaling's autobiography, Everyone's Talking About Me, and she won New York Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
With her Matt Damon little spoof, and that's how she got her first job offer as a writer on The Office. So that's what inspired me to go to Fringe.
Yeah.
Now,
when did you first go to Fringe? Was this your first year
yes.
for it? Okay.
Yes, I had never participated, and I
mm-hmm.
actually missed the cutoff
for
the Fringe Festival.
For the Fringe Festival that takes place, the regular Indie Fringe in August, I think the cutoff is in the spring before
mm-hmm.
6 months or so. So you got to go to Fringe this year and check stuff out, and
mm-hmm.
sounds like got inspired a bit by it.
Oh, yeah, I came to her asking idea, like, you know, about the signups and stuff, and she told me I missed it, and mm-hmm. she's like, well, why don't you just, you know, make it a little longer and put on an actual show, and she gave me some dates, and I signed the paperwork, and
awesome.
We've been going ever since.
Yeah, well, Pauline's great that way, and the great thing about Indie Fringe is, especially now that they have their main building that is down just off of College and Mass Avenue, that that they're able to do shows throughout the entire year,
mm-hmm.
in addition to the regular Fringe Festival that's in August. So so you had this idea for a show and decided to put on. So Pauline said expand it a bit,
mm-hmm.
and now you're a student at Ivy Tech right now, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you pulled together friends, family, other people to
mm-hmm.
work
yeah,
on this. How's that been going for you?
It's a little hard because everyone that I surround myself with, friends and family, they're so funny and naturally talented. And so I was like, perfect, you know, I'll ask you, like grab
mm-hmm.
you and you can come right on in. But I found it hard being a director because I want to yell at them, but I don't want to yell at them because I want this to be a great thing that we share.
Right.
I don't want this to ruin our relationship. So And so being the director, you know, they'll come to me with like, well, I have a date or I have this and this, you know, like rehearsal time or I can't be there. And any other director would be like, well, too bad. You made a commitment. But I was like, oh, all right. So
you're, I mean, you've done theater before, but
mm-hmm.
first time writer and first time director?
Yes.
So let's talk about those two processes because that's a lot to undertake. So as a first-time writer approaching writing a script, I mean, how was that for you? How did you sort of figure out how to do this?
I went to Half Price Books and
mm-hmm.
bought a lot of books about screenplay writing.
Mm-hmm.
I had attempted little 5-minute bits on my own, but I never had a correct format. When I went into writing, I looked at each princess as it was its own skit, its own
mm-hmm.
little script. So,
sure.
Each of them have their, you know, own very separate plot. I really broke it up. So it didn't feel like I was writing like a full play, like a full, you know, like 200-page
mm-hmm.
play.
So it was more, overwhelming, yeah.
Yeah, so it was more like, I was like, okay, now I'm working on Snow White. I banged out like 10 pages for Snow White, then I moved on, and then I went back and re-edited.
Now, did you, when you were writing it, did you also then, I mean, have your actors, I mean, try stuff out to see what worked and then sort of go back and rewrite based on that?
Or? Yeah, it was definitely not a traditional play format. We didn't have the play finished, then audition. It mm-hmm. was more like, will you play this for me?
Mm-hmm.
Will you play that for me? And then I wrote, and of course, comedy is, it's never an individual original thing.
Mm-hmm.
You might be up there by yourself telling jokes, but you didn't think of it by yourself. It's the person you saw on the subway doing that, and you know what you saw. It's, you know, the person you were having the conversation with. Like, it's just, it's never by yourself. So it would have been silly of me to think that my script was never going to change.
And it sounds like you're getting a lot of feedback from your actors.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would write, and then we would go through something. And they would be like, well, maybe we could do this. And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And then we could do this, and it would lead into this. So
mm-hmm.
it was very much a collaboration.
Cool.
And so and they're the reason why the show is going to be as it is, as funny as I hope it to be, because I have their input and their creative, you know.
And that obviously affected your ability as a first-time director, too. I mean, as you said, you wanted to, at times, I'm sure, yell at them, but recognizing that that's not actually what directors do. I mean, maybe in some movies or something,
yeah.
But, I mean, really, your job is to guide them. So how did you learn that part of the process?
Oh, it's been a really slow process.
It sounds like you're still learning.
I am. And it's the first time that I've ever networked with people as well outside of,
mm-hmm.
you know, in high school, because you don't really have any, like, you got your choir director, your band, you know. But here I have so many other people that are putting effort into the show. So it's like, it's communicating with Pauline and Patrick at the Indie Fringe, and then it's talking to my actors, and then I have like the tech, and so you just you want to put on something that is going to make other people laugh, and they're like, how can I balance, you know, being a part of the show? How do I balance being the guiding hand? How do I balance, you know, not letting them like take it over? Like, it's just, it was a huge dynamic.
Sure.
That I was just not prepared for. But I dove right on it anyway. So I'm still learning. I know what to do, what not to do for the next one. I have a better idea of the process that I will undergo for future shows, but I'm constantly learning.
So planning for the next one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah?
Definitely. We have decided as a group that we are going to donate some of the profits to Riley, you know, give back.
Yeah.
Because we're so fortunate to be able to do this, and then put the rest into a fund to put on our next show, because I financed this one by myself.
Yeah.
So this time I'll have something to, you know, I've been saving up my tips and counting out quarters,
mm-hmm.
you know, to pay for all of this. So next time I'll have something to grab from, and I'll be able to maybe.
Kenzie, you need to work on sponsors.
I have no idea. Like, I have no idea. That's why Pauline's been so great. Like, I would have had, you know, she's been doing like putting stuff into the media, and she's
mm-hmm.
been doing this, and she's the reason why I'm here now. So I'm horrible at media, social media, like promoting, and so I'm just very blessed and grateful to have everyone wanting to help and be a part of the project.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun play, and again, that's going to be on Friday the 22nd and Saturday the 23rd at the Fringe Building. So as you're doing this, tell me what your major is at Ivy Tech.
I'm general studies. I will be. Hopefully the game plan is to finish up and be at IEPY in the fall for communications.
Okay. I was wondering if you were thinking about, you know, sort of switching or,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting into communications or theater or something like that. I mean, now that you're doing this.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that was always the plan. I just didn't know how to go about going towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Because theater and live television, sort of like an SNL kind of thing. That's always been the goal. That's always been the dream. But how do I parlay that into like a real world, like getting my feet, you know, getting on the ground type of ideas.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely on your way. Now, one thing I want to be clear about, even though you are dealing with princesses and princes sort of after the fact, this is not exactly a kids show.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This is 16 and plus.
Mm-hmm.
They will check ID at the door. I definitely had a hard time. I was like, this is not something that children should see.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the younger generations, they're a lot more aware of what's going on. And so that's why we felt 16 was a good age. There's no nudity. There's no extreme, you know, it's not racist. It's not like it's just, but it is a little off color.
Sure.
It's not for everyone. And I tell that it's on the flyer, not for everyone. this is not something that, you know, your grandma might want to see or, you know, your 12-year-old should see. But it's definitely something that if you have an open mind and you just like to laugh.
Yeah.
It has no point. It has no greater purpose, you know, to make you go home and rethink your life. You know, no great underlying meaning. It's just, we just want to make you laugh.
Kenzie, that sounds excellent. I wish you the best of luck with your show.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have a great time with it.
Oh, I will definitely try.
Looking forward to seeing you again.
Oh, I would love to see you again. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Travis DiNicola with playwright and director Kenzie Suter. Her play, Dr. Phil Presents Happily Ever After, debuts this Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Indie Fringe Theater. More information at indiefringe.org. Indiefringe.org.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll preview the Ballet Theatre of Carmel's Nutcracker.
I'll find out about the upcoming Zionsville Home and Music Tour.
And I'll chat with author Michael Martone. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.